This is the Morning Crossfire on 92.3 Nigeria Info.
12 minutes gone past 8 o'clock. What's the weather looking like at your end? Well, we were dealing with COVID-19, and then there was the report of a variant, and then other variants, and now the latest is called Omicron. It's been recorded or reported in some countries, first in South Africa, and Sri Ramaphosa is very upset because some countries have barred flights from some Southern African nations just because. So there is a talk of we're being victimized because we're being stigmatized because. But for those who may not know, it's normal for viruses to mutate. It's not an abnormal thing. So people are asking why are we getting different variants. It's normal. It's a normal thing. And a doctor is here with me in the studio. He'll tell us more about it. Yeah. Of course, Nigeria has spoken very quickly. Federal government says we don't have it yet. I'd like to play the last part of what the Director General of the Nigeria Center for Disease Control, Ifedayo Adetifa, said. I'm going to play that first, just the last part of it, and then we will talk with my guest, Dr. Nsika Akintia is here. Good morning.
Morning. Good to see you. No, thanks for having me.
All right, so let's hear what Adetifa said.
Preparation for the COVID-19 Omicron variant is concerned. We are adopting a watchful waiting posture.
All right, a watching, waiting posture is what the Nigerian government is adopting. Dr. Ntia, what is that? What do you think that means? I know you're not part of the NCDC.
So what you must glean from that is, and that's what everybody in the world is actually doing, is there's a component of this where you need to just wait for the right amount of scientific data to step in. For now, there's a lot of work to gather, you know what I mean, and this is kudos to the level of technology we've got now, you know, within days of sequencing this variant. We're looking for what exactly are the characteristics and how bothered should we be. But I think learning from the experience of the past 20 months, really, it's 22 months or 23 months. It's should we not to get too paranoid in your initial measures and therefore cause other catastrophes, if you like, down the line, maybe non-pandemic related. So I think that there's a balance everybody must seek. So watchful and waiting doesn't mean absolutely idle or not doing anything at all. For example, I know that as of yesterday, there was this furious effort to sequence current cases, so recent cases, just sequence them to see whether we're picking up another
locally?
Locally in Nigeria, yeah. You know, we sequence in Nigeria as well, by the way, just so you know. We sequence in the three labs that sequence in Nigeria, two very active ones, NIMR, and then the one at Ede. So those are very, very, very active, and they do it for free. So all of the samples, you just get recent samples, throw them there, and they will sequence very quickly and tell you the pattern of what we're dealing with currently. You know, that's how we got the Delta, confirmed Delta in Nigeria, for example, when Delta first came. So that's what. So that watchful and waiting doesn't mean idle. It doesn't mean not doing anything at all. It means that some of the extreme measures, you want to think a bit about it. Are they really worth it? Is the risk more than the benefit, for example? And I mean, look at South Africa. I just think that's horribly unfair, to be honest, what's happening there in terms of the reaction to what transpired. Maybe we'll get to there sometime in the show. Do you want me to talk about it?
We will talk about it. U.S. President Joe Biden has said the Omicron variant is a cause for concern, not a cause for panic. The WHO says the likelihood of a potential further spread of Omicron at the global level is high. Let's talk about that, because we've seen countries, maybe this is them not doing anything, you know, they're already saying we're not going to have flights from these countries.
So it's a knee-jerk initial reaction, but I always say, and I think I've been on here long enough and frequently enough to say, to what end? So what Israel, for example, Israel has banned any foreign visitor to Israel for 2 weeks. to give them time to prepare. What does that actually mean? And this means that even Israeli nationals returning to Israel have to go through quarantine, irrespective of where you're coming from. So that's an extreme measure. Other countries have gone on to ban the Southern African nations. They've registered at least seven of them across the Northern Hemisphere, you know, that they can't come in, flights can't come in from there. But the key thing is that actually then that's being punished for being scientifically transparent. Because it was they had enough technology and enough, you know, really near time sequencing to say, oh, by the way, we're picking up something that's different here. Mm-hmm. Guys, here's a sequence. So everybody's aware globally at the same time, and they've been punished for that. Because it didn't start in South Africa. And that's the thing about, that's why Ramaphosa is absolutely, you know, completely pissed off, because he's actually saying, Jesus Christ, you know, this is how the global community should be acting. You know, I got information, I put it out there, we all work this together, you know, and I solve it together. But they're almost being victimized for being the ones to put it out there first. And then my question, and this is what I asked on someone that I was recently, is, so if this vaccine was sequenced in London, for example, or New York, would the rest of the world have risen and said, we ban people coming in from New York and all of that, with the implications for politics, trade, and all of that kind of thing? I don't think so. No. So that's the point about, it's a cheap way to do this. And with COVID, one thing I'm very sure of, that you do not deal with COVID in small pockets. You deal with it as a group in a slightly unified approach. That's how best you deal with it.
Okay. So just to buttress what Dr. Ntia said, the Alpha variant was discovered in the UK, the Beta, South Africa, Gamma, Brazil, and Delta, India. Omicron, multiple countries. I don't know why he's reading like that. But yes, some variants have been found in certain countries and they didn't have this reaction.
It's a very, very visceral reaction to this. And at a time when we have had this much experience, it's really actually never worked. This ban, sectional bans, have never worked. They've only retarded, I don't even think they've actually retarded the progress of, once it's in, it's in. Mm. For example, you have 135 cases in the world right now already reported, you know, as of yesterday, and it's going to keep rising. And any number you get like that, multiply by maybe 1,000 or maybe something like that, because that's how it goes. Mm. I think the key things to look for is, what does this variant do that should make us this worried? It is this newness that's causing the panic right now. So I can understand the newness.
Yeah, but they're also saying high risk. I'm not sure where that data
comes from. So the risk in that context, matter of fact, the most concerning thing about the Omicron as we know it currently, and we must admit that we're only learning very, very early stages of this virus, particular variant, is that the two mutations on the main mutations on it are very significant, complex mutations on the S gene. I mean, that's the jargon. Let me not go into that. But it's made it possible that this may not be susceptible to the vaccines as readily as the other variants of concern. So they're saying as much as 40% less effective the vaccines currently in use may be against it. That's the concern. Mm. So that's a public health concern looking on a macro scale. No one is certain yet that it is more virulent. The Delta came and Delta beat us up, because clearly it's worse. It was worse than its predecessors in terms of how severe the illness is. Particularly if you were unvaccinated. Mm. This one is that, oh wow, the vaccines we currently have may not be as effective. And that's the thing that we must have in the back of our minds, and that's the concern.
So where does that leave us?
So Pfizer, the mRNA viruses, vaccines, Pfizer and Moderna, the two companies that make them and all that, have said they need 100 days to tweak the current vaccine to be able to give perhaps more specific cover. And this is not unusual. It's just that we are in COVID times. Everybody's up in everybody's arms. The influenza vaccine, which is the same family of viruses as the COVID vaccines, has to be tweaked every year to match the mutations that are expected. With the COVID virus, SARS-CoV, you know, CoV-2 and all of that, there has been hundreds of mutations. The vast majority of them are insignificant, in that they don't confer any significant characteristic change to the one we know and we are dealing with. So for example, if it doesn't make you more sick, don't bother. Then it's called a variant of interest. Mm. If it doesn't transmit faster, it's a variant of interest. If it responds to the vaccines, it's already taken care of. so no need to make a lot of noise. So the most significant thing about this one is that it may dribble the vaccine a bit. I remember that the other one that came from Brazil as well, that was a concern, but thankfully it didn't become a widespread thing. So this one has the high risk of spread because it's also supposed to be like, that was Delta's, you know, main poser.
Yeah, but you know, even in some countries right now, they still have lockdowns.
Yeah, sure. They were already in lockdowns before Omicron, by the way.
Yeah.
Austria has pushed, you know, and all of that. And they were pushing lockdowns, targeted lockdowns for unvaccinated areas, for areas in France. Everybody, they've gone into their fourth and fifth surges around Europe. It tells us that we're in the mix for another
wave. Yeah, because the holiday season is here.
Absolutely.
And we're having lots of people coming in.
Absolutely. And we're always about, say, 5-6 weeks behind.
And there's this matter of, you know, fraud going on. You're coming in. In fact, there was a video. Some guy, I'm not sure who he is again, and he comes in and says, at the airport, someone is asking for money. Give me money, I'll give you
COVID,
any document you want, just so that you pass. So there's no queue, so there's no anything. So we have that staring us in the face. People are going to come in, they're going to come with a lot of money. They're not used to that, you know, stress at the airports. Yes, so they want to.
Free smooth passage, I mean, just convenience.
And people are willing, in fact, people are willing to let you do that.
So it's a degree of personal responsibility we must first take. And then there are the guys who, Port Health, for example, who run that interface, and then Fan, who runs the entire airport sort of operations. So this is not where you want to become smart or, you know, just, you know, make a little money by the side. You may compromise the entire chain of link of defense, and you know every defense of this nature in public health is only as strong as its weakest link. You've just totally mortgaged that defense, whatever they set up in that place, by letting this sort of window exist. And then the individual who's coming in, if you're flying in from out of country, I think you should be a certain level of person, education, exposure, things like that. You think that you understand the greater good for which this inconvenience sort of represents, and therefore sort of stick with it and even maybe help improve it by saying, you know what, this could be faster, but not compromise it to such a level where you put a dollar or $5 or $10 out there to get someone to give you a fake COVID certificate or something. I mean, vaccine, I don't know, but I would still think that that's not the majority, but you know, one person, all it takes is just one person to step in and it may mortgage that entire chain.
So South Africa, I mean, it's like a neighboring country in terms of, you know, and they've had some recent events there.
Sure.
I think there was a fashion event last week. So we've had a lot of people coming to Nigeria from South Africa. Would you suggest a quarantine or from Southern African bloc?
So I'm not a big fan of that. I'm sorry. This is my personal sort of approach to this sort of thing. To this, you know, number one, I personally believe that it's already here. You know, by the time you pick it up, you're almost a few weeks late. It's just the way it is. Number one. Number two, I think that, I mean, the Canadian cases, for example, were Nigerian-linked travelers.
Yeah.
So if we're talking about, really, you want to say, you don't come here, but you're already exporting it, in quotes.
Mm.
So, like I said, if this thing doesn't make us more sick, significantly more sick, and the issue is the vaccine thing, let's deal with that.
Yeah, but talking about vaccination, I think the last time I checked was 4%. I don't know if that data is even accurate. 4% of people who have been vaccinated.
Double dose.
Yeah, double dose. And so that means 96%.
Of Nigerians.
Yeah, that's on one side. And on the other side, in other countries, they're giving booster jabs already. So where are we?
So we're so far behind the curve. That is the real tragedy. That's the real tragedy. So it's not about locking our borders. It's about stepping up this innate basic level of cover that we need in country to even give us a fighting chance, however the variants go. Because even as we hear and cry about Omicron, it's only a partial resistance to the vaccine. So it's still more than 60% effective, even so far from what we know so far, against Omicron. And what they are even talking now is that even before the tweaked vaccines come, if you boost, particularly mRNA vaccines, so Moderna and Pfizer, you actually have a better chance against even Omicron. So, so there's already existence, but they're all probably around vaccination. So that's the name of the game. So if in country, after all this time, we're still miserly, miserable, 3-4%, because actually for double dose, it's less than 4%, actually, you know, I mean, I just said that last week. So it means to say, Jesus Christ, the gap is too much. And I kind of wonder what needs to happen. Even with the third wave and the amount of deaths we saw during the third wave, the amount of suffering, the amount of people, I mean, everyone should by now have someone they know who's either died from or suffered severe COVID, sort of. You should know someone, because it really became that widespread with the Delta, with the third wave and Delta variant in place. So I would have thought that that would have moved us so much further forwards, but the data doesn't support that. And then also, if we go around the health centers, while some are doing a real good job trying to get that out there, there's some that just don't. You don't see the call to arms that it should be for every frontline plus, you know, senior plus management leader level health person.
I've been wondering if the frontline and the health people are taking it these days, because in the early days many of them were rejecting it. And they'd rather do the non-pharmaceutical than, you know, get the jab.
So sustainability is a challenge with non-pharmaceuticals. How long and how consistently can you continue to do non-pharmaceuticals for a period of...
Even these days, I went out over the weekend, so I was asking, is there still COVID? Nobody's wearing a mask. Nobody's, you know...
It's tiring, you know.
And the places where they have those signages, you know, those signs don't come out. Nobody's checked. Everybody's tired.
It's human nature not to be able to live with long-term restrictions. In the short term, everybody can be fired up and be afraid enough to do it. After a while, it's like, I beg. So you have that sort of, that's the human nature. You're negating nature. And once you're negating nature, you're in for a long thing. And that's the thing I talk about. So, but if you get a jab, it's nature. You're just inducing nature to take a certain action. It is, totally independent of your conscious self. All you have to do consciously is go take it. So it's more sustainable. It acts independent of you and just goes and boosts your immune system. And I think that'll be far more effective longer term. But here we are looking at this situation and saying, my God. My point is, I still am asking myself, just how particularly bad is this in Nigeria? That what's the real big problem? Is it a lack of awareness campaigns? I don't know. Why are we so, as a large majority of us, if you like, still absolutely unmoved and unwilling to take this vaccine?
All right. Perhaps a caller will tell us after the commercial. We're talking Omicron, the latest COVID variant. Dr. Sika Kuntia is my guest. We'll keep talking after the commercial. My name is Enoch Bavere. Stay tuned.
You are tuned in to 99.3 Nigeria.
We take off with the biggest conversations, with an exchange of opinions and ideas on the Morning Crossfire. Settle you into your day when we say hello, Port Hackett.
Take you on a ride to the sunny side of life.
Hover a bit while picking at the details on hard facts. Take a detour through the exciting world of sports.
And get back on track with Let's Talk.
Land you safely as we chit-chat into the morning on Chat Station. And then do it all over again on your number one talk, news and sports radio station, 92.3 Nigeria Info.
This is the Morning Crossfire on 92.3 Nigeria Info.
We've got 19 minutes before 9 o'clock. Thank you for staying tuned. We're talking COVID, the new COVID variant, Omicron. For the U.S. President Joe Biden, he says it's a cause for concern, not for panic. The WHO is warning of the likelihood of potential further spread of Omicron at the global level, says it's very high. Good thing is no deaths connected with the Omicron variant have been reported. That's according to the WHO. But he says if another major source of a surge of COVID-19 takes place driven by Omicron, consequences may be severe. But then again, some countries have imposed travel bans, which the WHO has cautioned against, fearing that blocking travel from countries where new variants are first spotted could be unfair and dissuade surveillance. Yes, let's talk about that for a bit. My guest is Dr. Nsika Kuntia. Let's talk about this matter of, you know, dissuading surveillance, because, you know, some of the other variants were found in other countries, didn't get a ban, you know, nothing like that. And now in South Africa, and seven other Southern African countries, you know, have been banned from the UK, the US, and I think some parts of Europe.
So that's the thing. I thought they should have been applauded first for the transparency, the quality of that, the science and the public health systems to pick this up quickly, you know, try and do a sequence and then put it back out there in the body of scientific knowledge to aid global response. And this is what you get. So the next thing that might happen then is to do what, you know, I mean, China, for example, when they started, where it started, there was a huge 1 month period where they refused to declare, where they just didn't come forward early enough. And there's a lot of body of knowledge or schools of thought that think about that. How much different would it have been if they declared as early as perhaps this year, because different Omicron? And then the reason perhaps I can think would be that backlash from the rest of the world, you know, is what, like, has managed this, you know, sort of carefully and all of that. And maybe also not knowing how severe this could become. But that's the thing. Like, I don't think the reward for that vigilance and transparency should be this, you know, blanket ban that has economic complete consequences and all of that. While I'm not saying that you should go on and take it everywhere, you know, I think that there should be a bit more circumspect. Countries should be a bit more circumspect in how they approach this. And that's not your frontline defense. So you ban one case has come in already. You picked one case up and all of that. You know how many have come in the week before? And once it's in, it starts building in country. And if it transmits as fast as the Delta or even more, as is being suggested, it's there already. So it's like, we look at things like lockdowns, for example. You lock down not to stop, but to slow, right? When you ban travels, I'm sometimes not as sure, because that's not your only source. Increasingly, we're seeing that it's much more widespread than people originally thought. It didn't start in South Africa, but it's raging there. So it's, well, raging is maybe a bit of a severe term. That's where they found the most number of cases currently. But that's because they're checking. That's because they're documenting. They're doing real-time sequencing. If not, you would point fingers at them. If it was raging in Nigeria, we wouldn't even know.
We wouldn't know.
We wouldn't know. Our sequencing is behind the fact. It's after the fact. You may find the sequence, the national sequencing result, maybe 3 months after.
Mm.
5 months. Yeah, because they collect for quite a lot for a period and then start sequencing. To give us retrospective information. So except there's like an emergency like this, not the best, okay, sequence now, you know, but typically you collect and sequence, and it's after the fact. It's a few months after. Certainly some time after, in real time, to get the sequence. That's how much of this was there and all of that. What's the dominant variant now? You know, because we started out with the Eta and Alpha, and then, you know, it's gone on to Delta, now came into the mix in the third wave, and then who knows what happened in the fourth wave. But if we even move away from Omicron, because it can be distracting, there was already a wave brewing. It's already a wave brewing in Europe, pre-Omicron, that is not Omicron.
Mm.
And I think what Nigeria should be looking at is the fact that once Europe goes in, we come in after.
Yeah.
You know, and so we're looking at Christmas coming in, the holidays and all of that, and therefore rising from, like we did in December of last year, you know, going to the holiday and rising from it with a huge wave, because that was our tallest wave, second wave. We had the highest number of cases. The third wave had the most severe cases, higher number of deaths, if you like, but the second wave had a higher number of cases. Yeah, and it was shorter, sadly. I mean, interestingly, it was shorter in terms of the span, but that's what I'm talking about here. So we should not distract ourselves with Omicron and really be looking at the fact that there's a brewing wave already, you know, that's already brewing, and Omicron may be irrelevant to that wave.
Mm.
And that's what we should be looking at. And that we are still playing significant catch up with the perhaps most important defense, which is widespread vaccination. Crazy that we are still in single digits. It's unbelievable. Because Africa averagely is already at 18-19%. South Africa's pushed into the 20s. So why are we that far behind? And what is that emergency? You know, if something is a real problem, you're almost like, this is the number one priority for the government, if you like, and all other leaders of thought and organizations and all of that. Why is that emergency? Why is that everything goes down to this? And then funny thing is that we actually have vaccines in country. So we have vaccines in country. What is going on? I swear.
Interesting that, you know, we're here now. Tomorrow is December 1st. And the federal government has said that federal civil servants that are not vaccinated won't, you know, be allowed to work. How do you think that will go?
So I think you must first understand the principles around this. While I'm not a big fan of mandates, I clearly believe that the single biggest lever that would move us to higher levels of vaccination is mandates. Mm. If you feel you cannot access you can go to your workplace, for example, and if they can get around the legalese, you know, to understand if it's legal and all of that, and all of that. I mean, so with Obaseki in Edo, how much of a furore that led to. But the point is that it's not about militarizing that thing or saying don't. It's actually like, you know, Niger, just put this thing, you can't get this without this, and everybody rushes to get it. Mm. Because a good number of us may not have thought it through as to why we are not taking the vaccines, but just be that, I mean, there are people, we I'm part of an enhanced vaccine access program where you actually take vaccines to people's doorsteps and then try and do that. And
Or
to communities, aggregate in communities, and just say in this particular place. So while everybody typically now you have health centers giving all that because of the cold chain, I can say I take this batch out, 50 whatever, you know, and I'm going here today, and I pre-announce that, and then, you know, and all of that. The way they're taking to churches, some churches and all that. I mean, right now the federal government actually says if you can assure us that you have a group of people in a particular place, come to us and we'll actually delegate people to go. That sort of thing, but there has to be some aggression and you know, enlightenment around it. Now, the people in that program who take the vaccines, you know, I said, hey, this has been on for almost a year. Why are you taking your first dose now? He's like, oh, God. I just don't know where to take myself, you know. Or
someone called me a few days ago and said, I'm around here, where can I get the vaccination done?
And
this best thing is like the journalist.
I see the look on your face. I see how astounded.
And I have colleagues. When I say colleagues, I mean journalists, not here, journalists who are running away from taking the vaccine. They're running away. Like that's the safety net. They're running towards away from the vaccine is where they should be. And I'm wondering what's going on.
So that's the thing. And sometimes at that position, maybe sometimes I'm almost. Like, really? So when you sit down and engage, for those who can be open enough to discuss their fears and all that, a good chunk of it is unfounded.
Yeah.
So they don't even have very strong convictions. Just like, I have this feeling that this thing is not.
Yeah, that's one. On the other side, there's the, you know, the falsehood that came out. Oh, there's this doctor in America that's saying that it's fake. If you take it, then there's this text they were spreading on WhatsApp. I think WhatsApp is the greatest evil when it comes to fake news. Oh, there's this text that's spreading on WhatsApp that if you take it, you'll die within 2 years. So I told the person that said the last, I said, but people die every day now. It's okay. People die every day. So why is that? So they spread all this falsehood through social media and people take it, hook, line. People are not even asking.
The deeper question, what are educated questions, if you like.
Yeah.
So die from what, why, what, all of that. There's the conspiracy, there's all the Bill Gates conspiracy, there's all that kind of, there's the Tosca G effect.
5G. The 5G that we're going to launch in 2 days. They're testing it in 2 days, on Thursday.
There you go.
The same 5G that, you know, at that time was.
The world's biggest.
They still have religious organizations still doing the faith thing.
I mean, it's. I usually don't like to dabble into religious stuff and all that, but Jesus Christ, it's a big disservice to the public that. Because you introduce and you take a power that should be reserved only for the most divine things, and you apply it something that negates something that in very real time, such a large public health risk, you're actually negating. And because people don't debate the dogma. So if it comes from a religious perspective, it's dogmatic. There's no debate around it. So even extremely high educated folks that I know take it hook, like, if it comes from their section of the church or religion.
Yeah, and the religious leaders know that. So why are they not using it to push the message? Because many of them have to take the tests, and I think some of them have taken the jab. So why are they not preaching it? Why are they? Maybe because of their initial, you know, about, oh, it's fake. Now they've gone secretly to take it and they can't come out to say.
Because they travel.
They travel. They travel.
So, yeah, I'm very certain and I know for certain, you know, that a good number of them will take the job and actually, you know, do the test and travel and all of that. So again, not a debate I want to come into here on radio, but it's really sad. And I think it's a big disservice to that thrust. And again, these are the kind of things, you know, what are the low-hanging fruits that, you know, society can go after to turn this tide and get us, you know, into double digits and get us, you know, further along the line. 1 year on, we should be talking 40-50%. That's where we need to get to. So if you add people who have had COVID, whether they knew it or not, plus those who are vaccinated, you get your people with immunity. And we know that a lot of natural immunity exists in Nigeria because a lot of people were exposed and didn't even realize it. And for some reason, that helps us sort of not be, have the worst effects of it. Mm. I keep saying, you just need the wrong mutation to happen.
Just one.
And it beats all that existing defense. And you can't... hope and luck can help your strategy. It cannot be your strategy.
Or faith.
All right, there you go.
It's not my portion. All right, so what's the message for Nigerians at this time? Because like you said, there's something looming after the holiday season, and we're not even there. 96% still going around, able to spread quickly the virus.
Again, it's that, forget Omicron. I mean, that we'll get the details about that one in the next couple of weeks or so, but that there is really the looming fourth wave that's going to come to us around the peak of the holidays, and then and we're spectacularly unprepared for it. The biggest thing you can do for yourself and family and all of that is get everybody in the jab, get everybody jabbed, get everybody protected and all of that, and all of that. And I kind of also ask that if we have so many vaccines and there's only so many people willing to take it, we should actually be putting out the booster doses by now in Nigeria for those who are going to take it.
Yeah.
So that, because vaccines are still sometimes expiring on us, mm-hmm. and things like that. Let those who are willing. So put the booster policy in place. People go take a third shot if you're already taking the two and maybe 6 months in. Go get a third shot. Stuff like that. Protect those who are willing to protect, first of all. And then target strongly those groups you can move, you know, whose opinions you can shift to really push the vaccine campaign. Really, frankly, ultimately, it's about the vaccines. Nothing more.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Ntel, for your time.
Thank you, Anna. It's always a pleasure.
And for someone who's still hesitant, he says it's big on mandates. Perhaps you wake up tomorrow and what would be the biggest one right now in Nigeria?
You can't earn money.
If
you can't get to your workplace, if you can't get to the places where you think is where I turn over, we get revenue and all of that, that's Nigeria's biggest lever. It also affects revenue. Everybody can take it.
So, that's food for thought. My name is Anel Bavery. Thank you for joining the conversation.